Is our main speaker for this evening, DK from SD.
Good evening. My name is DK Sappington. I am an alcoholic. I'm a real alcoholic as defined by our text on page 21, the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which means I stand before you, a sober man only by the graces of a very loving and very forgiving God. I know that to be an absolute truth. Take a minute here and welcome our newcomer, Matt. Being a member of this fellowship for me has meant that I never, ever, ever have to drink again, and I never have to be alone. And drunk and alone was something I knew a whole hell of a lot about before I got here. Congratulations to Alex and Justin for 1 year. They say the first year is the toughest, right? Bullshit. It's the year before the first year that kicked my butt. Congratulations to Sean on his 90 days. They say at 90 days we can finally make a decision on whether we want to go through this or not. So congratulations. Make sure this is your last 90 days. I'll get into that a little bit later. As I said, I'm an alcoholic. I've got a sobriety date. I have a sponsor. He knows that he's my sponsor. And it's always an honor to speak at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Somebody said, "Boy, y'all dressed up." The Alcoholics Anonymous that I came into, I was taught that it should look like something has happened to you when you are honored with an opportunity to speak in front of a group of Alcoholics Anonymous. Old school stuff. So let me get to it. I drank the required amount in the required way to be a member of this here fellowship. And I did everything that we as alcoholics must do to get here. That's pretty much what it was like. But since I got 35 minutes or so, maybe I'll go into a bit more detail. Like the speaker before me, I never really fit in as a kid. I was that kid. I came from middle-class parents from the Midwest. Everything was good in my house. There was no trauma in my childhood. I wish I could tell you that I drank because my mommy didn't love me and my daddy beat me upside the head. All these things may be true, but that's not why I drank. I really did not fit anywhere. I was that kid. I don't know what that really means, but I hear a lot of people in our fellowship say that. And I want to let you know today I am just like you guys. Just like you guys. Now, when I was in third grade, I moved from a neighborhood in the inner city of Cleveland out to the suburbs. My parents moved me out there so my sister and I would have a better opportunity at education. And I went from a neighborhood where the only white people we saw were on television to a neighborhood where everybody was white. Now, not only did I feel different, I was different. I looked different. I talked different. And in third grade, I was ill-prepared to deal with that. Now, my parents used to have cocktail parties when I was young. And it was there that I observed how drinking was done in a group setting. So to impress my newfound suburban chums, I drank. And for whatever reason, liquor worked for me. You know what I mean? I didn't feel left out. I didn't feel less than. I didn't feel inferior. I felt like I was one. Now, as I look back, I realize I felt like I was one because I surrounded myself with people who drank like me. But at the time, liquor was my solution. Let's fast forward through this nonsense, okay? Because like a bad relationship, my liquor eventually turned on me. My liquor started doing things to me instead of doing things for me. I don't like to dwell into the mess. We all know what the mess is. The broken opportunities, the hurt people we leave behind, the mess that we make as alcoholics, we all know what that is. Let me not waste your time by sharing my specific mess. I'll get to what happened. My ego and my alcoholism had taken me to a point where I was homeless. I was living under the Sunset Boulevard Bridge over the Hollywood Freeway like a college-educated troll. I had some Windex that I had stolen from 7-Eleven. I had a newspaper that I had got out of the garbage, and I was that guy on the freeway exit ramp messing up your windshield for change. This guy looks surprised. Don't let the smooth taste fool you, baby. I'm a real alcoholic. But I had become invisible. You know what I mean? The homeless people, we see them, right? But we don't look at them. We look around them. We look by them. We look through them. But we don't make eye contact with them because we never know what they're going to do. They become invisible to us. And that's what happened to me. I had become invisible. I wanted to tell you that this is not where I'm supposed to be. I wanted to let you know that this was not my story. But there I was, cleaning your windshield, begging for money, invisible. Now, when you live on the street long enough, you run into the problem of getting money to get loaded. See, I had to stay loaded because if I didn't drink, I would have to remember all the things that I had done, the pain that had driven me to the street, the pain of not having the mortgage or rent money one more time, the pain of looking your children in the eye and saying, there will be no Christmas this year because I drank up that money, the pain of promising that this will never happen again when in your heart, you know it will. So I took to the streets. But living on the streets after a while, I had to find a way to make some money. So I ran into what they call the criminal element. All right? And they offered me an opportunity to be the inside man. I didn't know what that meant, but it sounded damn cool. You know what I mean? The inside man. It turns out the inside man is a guy that goes inside the bank and cashes the forged payroll checks. So I went down to Alvarado Park, got me a fake ID, and I became the inside man. It was November. It was a Monday night. All I wanted was a six-pack of St. Pauli Girl, a hotel room to get out from under that bridge, and I wanted to watch me some Monday night football. That's what my life had been reduced to. That's all I wanted. That's it. So I went down to the Food for Less on the corner of Western and Sunset to cash one of these forged checks, and that's where I got pinched. The police came down and snapped me up, slapped me upside the head a bit, which they will occasionally do. They took me to the Hollywood division. And a gentleman said to me, he said, what is your name? And I said, my name is D.K. Sappington. And he said, you're going to sit right here until you're ready to talk to us. And I said, okay. And an hour later, he came back and he said, your name really is D.K. Sappington. And I said, yeah. And he said, well, normally when somebody gets a fake ID made, they don't put their real name on it. And I said, well, I'm not really a criminal. I'm an alcoholic and a crackhead. So they took me down to the fraud division in downtown Los Angeles, and they set me across from a detective. And the detective said to me, "It's pretty obvious you have no idea what you're doing out here. But if you tell us who put you up to this, we'll see to it that you get the help that you so desperately need. Please, I know the rules. You do the crime, you do the time. You take responsibility for your actions." Did I mention I was an alcoholic? I had never taken responsibility for anything, and I sure as hell wasn't going to start looking at 5 years state time. I sang like Ella Fitzgerald. You hear me? I told on everybody and everything. They threw me in the county jail. They rounded up my little band of thieves, and they dropped me back out on the same street that they had arrested me on, right up on Sunset. Now, I gamed up on some money. I got some liquor. I got some party favors, got some friends, and I got me a hotel room. If I had known this was the last time I was going to get loaded, I'd have had a bigger party. I remember the sun was coming up. I was out of money. I was out of friends. I was out of party favors. I was out of liquor, and soon I would be out of that hotel room and back underneath that bridge. And I had that brief moment. That brief moment that we as alcoholics all must have. That moment where you're coming down, but you haven't got anything to go back up with yet. That brief chip in time where you can no longer buy your own bullshit. This was no longer her fault, his fault, their fault, or your fault. This mess was my fault. And if I didn't do something, nothing was going to change. That brief moment in time. When I said the first AA prayer that we all learn, "God help me." I got my $5 from my key deposit. I got on the bus and I went to the Brentwood VA hospital. And I said, "Let me in, please. If you don't let me in, I will sleep on this lawn until you do." I had enough. I had enough. That's where my recovery began, at the Brentwood VA. So, I had been to AA before, and quite honestly, you guys were really messed up. There was nothing, nothing that these steps could do for me. All right? I knew that I was an alcoholic. I couldn't articulate that as I can now. But I knew I drank abnormally. What I did not know is if this solution that you were offering me would work. Especially the first step. H&I group came into the VA hospital and they gave us a little talk. And this old guy, I don't know who he was, I've never seen him again, gave me a definition of powerless that finally resonated. Let me share it with you. We all know people who are allergic to shellfish. Okay? They go out, they eat shellfish, they swell up, they turn red, they damn near die. All right? I'm allergic to liquor. You put liquor in my body, I will break out in homelessness and handcuffs, I guarantee you. Okay? The difference between me and a guy that's allergic to shellfish is 2 weeks from now, you can't go to the guy that's allergic to shellfish and say, "Dude, Red Lobster, what do you think?" He'll say, "No, no, no. The last time I did that, I almost died. But 2 weeks after I ended up face down in the gutter, you can come up to me and say, 'DK, how about a beer?'" And I'll say, "Okay." Because this time it's going to be different. This time I'm going to have a couple beers and I am going home. This time I'm going to smoke a $30 rock and I'm going to bounce, baby. Okay? It's going to be different. But what happens to me? What happens to me is once I drink that liquor, I'm off to the doggone races. There's no telling where I'm going to go or what I'm going to do. So I got a body that cannot handle this stuff. And I got a mind that tells me it's absolutely okay to try. And the reality of that paradox is I'm screwed. And if you be an alcoholic of my type, you be screwed too. It's going to take a miracle for me not to drink tonight. It's going to take divine intervention. That, my friends, is powerlessness. I had heard many different explanations of powerlessness before and since, but nothing resonated like that explanation did. I mean, it got me here. I understood. And I began my journey down the steps. Through the steps. Let me back up a little bit and talk about this step nonsense. All right? I hear a lot about trust issues from new people in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've got trust issues. I used to sit in a bar and explain my problems to whoever was sitting next to me and listen to these guys give me suggestions. And a couple doubles into the night, I'm thinking, this son of a bitch is a genius. You know, I'm going to try that. Then I come into Alcoholics Anonymous because I want to figure out the answer to my problem with liquor, and people who are already here tell me what they've done, and I want to debate it with them. Now remember, I sat next to that guy in the bar and listened to everything that beer chugging cheetah monkey told me and was willing to do what he suggested. But I come here and I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't think. This is not a trust issue, people. This is a I want to do what the hell I want to do issue. And that's the problem. It's not about trust. There's no way a new person can come into Alcoholics Anonymous and trust that this will work for them. Trust is the observed, consistent behavior over time. That's where trust comes from. What we're talking about here is faith. And if you're new, what else you got? Okay, so sometimes I go off on tangents. Anyway, I came down to San Diego after I got out of the VA hospital, and I start going to these here meetings, all right? And they said, you know, you need a sponsor. You need a sponsor because you got to take the steps. Well, you know, I got a college education. I can read this damn book. I don't know if I really need a sponsor. But I was told that this program would work for everybody. I did not believe that, so I made my mind up I would do everything that you guys suggested. So when it didn't work, I can look you in the eye and say, see, it doesn't work for somebody like me. So I went out and got a sponsor who spent most of his time laughing at me. If you have a sponsor, Ben, who laughs at you more than he does anything else, it's not about you, Holmes. My sponsor laughed at me because I used to say the same silly stuff that he used to say. And I reminded of him. And now I've got sponsees that do the same thing. I laugh at them because they're saying the same thing that I used to say. So I went and got a sponsor. Another diversion. A lot of people come in looking for sponsors. Have you heard this? I need to find the right guy. I need to look for somebody I can relate to. Yeah? Right? I'm an alcoholic. If I got into a car accident and my life was flowing out of me out in that street, and they scooped me up and took me to Kaiser Hospital, would I look for a doctor I could relate to? Or would I grab the first guy in a white coat to stitch my dumb ass up? While you're looking for a sponsor you can relate to, you might drink. And for some of us, to drink is to die. This is for real here. And anytime I see young guys balking at moving forward, I remind them to think back to that day before the first day you came into Alcoholics Anonymous. Think about that. The day before the day you came in. Remember that day? What if that was the rest of your life? That should be the motivation to move forward. So I got this sponsor guy, and we began our journey on the steps. Now, I grew up Southern Baptist. So step two was kind of tricky for me. You see, the white Jesus hadn't done a lot for me. So this whole thing about step two kind of shook me up a little bit. My sponsor said, you've been coming here for a little while. You've heard the stories. These people drank like you drank. They did the same silly stuff that you used to do. And today they're sober. You got two options here. Option number one, everybody is lying. Option number two, you might be wrong about this spiritual thing. Which sounds more logical? I came to believe. Just like that. Step two is not about finding God. I gotta find God. No, God ain't lost. He doesn't need me to find him. I'm the one that's wandering in the wilderness. What I need to do is trust and have faith in the program, and my God will find me. And that's what I did. I believed there was a power greater than me who could solve my problem. And I moved forward. Step three in my book is broken down into three different parts. There's a problem, there's a solution, and there's the reward. Because as an alcoholic, I need a reward for doing something as difficult as step three. Okay? The problem. I want what I want. I want it now. I want some of this, half of that, most of that, and baby, I want all of that. That's the problem. The problem is me. I'm the kind of guy who works really hard, and if I don't get what I want, then there's something wrong. Not once do I think that what I want may not be what God has in store for me. I know what I need, I know what I deserve, and while we're at it, I know what would be best for you, too. This is the problem. What's the solution? It's on the bottom of page 62. Here's the how and why of it. First and foremost, I had to quit playing God. Okay? So what my sponsor did was break that down into two parts. Okay? My job, God's job. My job is the process. And I can work very hard and diligently on that process. God's job is the result. If I am overvested in what I'm going to get, then I can't be in God's will. Truly being in a third step for me means I must be willing to accept my worst nightmare coming true, if it be God's will. Let's marinate on that for a second. Our worst nightmare coming true, if it be God's will. Someone somewhere may learn from my heartache. This idea that we come in and everybody gets happy, joyous, and free, no, that's not what this is about. I ask God for my daily bread. Ain't nobody said a damn thing about dessert. Life is real, and it's not always real fun. It's not about being happy, guys. It's about being okay when you're not. And that's what this program teaches me. That no matter where I'm at, no matter where I'm at on the scale, if I've got a God, I'm going to be okay. I've seen days of plenty, and I've seen nights with nothing to eat. And I've come through them all with your help and with a God of my understanding. Nothing about the third step comes natural to this alcoholic. It is not my nature to allow God to be God. I'm a man who makes things happen. That's my nature. But for me to stay sober, I have to go against what I actually am. I have to go against my nature. And that's what step three asked me to do. Ooh, tough, need a reward. When we sincerely took such a position, top of page 63, the third step promises, when we sincerely took such a position, remarkable things happen. Okay? Having a new employer God made sure I got everything I needed as long as those two conditions were met, which is I stay close to him and I do his work well. Okay? I've got to have faith. Now, after being sober for a period of time, I'm not talking faith anymore. I have proof. I can look back at my life and I know there's a God. I know there's a God. So as I tried to rest on my laurels after step three, my sponsor pointed out that joining paragraph between steps three and four. You all know it, right? Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things were blocking us. What? Blocking me from the sunlight of God's magnificent spirit. Although I am ready to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand him, there are things that are blocking me from him. Back up. Step three, I admitted I could not manage my own life, right? Only in a fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous will people who freely admit they cannot manage their own life tell you what to do with yours. The three words we do not hear enough of in our fellowship is, I don't know. All right, okay, moving on. So I got busy looking at the things that my sponsor said were blocking me from the sunlight of God's magnificent spirit. We make such a business out of the fourth step. I know I certainly did. All right? What is the fourth step really? It's a pissed off list. I can do that. Because when I got here, I was pissed off at everybody. All right? It's a fears list. I can do that. Because as quiet as it's kept, I'm afraid of everything. Everything. And it's a sexual inventory where I outline not how many times I got laid. I outline how many relationships I was in where I caused damage. And I'm telling you, that's every relationship I was ever in. So you just write down your life. That's what I did. Now, the fourth column kind of twisted me up a little bit. Because I kept hearing about it in these meetings, the fourth column, the fourth column, the fourth column. My sponsor said, you're not ready yet. I said, why? I've got my three columns. Let's do the fourth. He said, before you can do the fourth column, you must release the resentment you have towards those individuals, institutions, and principles. And that's the way our book is set up. Before we do the fourth column, we have to learn the angry man's prayer. We have to forgive and release the resentments that we have. How can I honestly and objectively look at my part of something if I still resent the person I'm looking at? It's a step in step four that is actually missed, and my sponsor hammered it. Okay, so I start looking at the fourth column. I got rid of my resentments and start looking at the fourth column, and what I saw was selfish, 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 fear. Okay? I'm so afraid, man. I'm afraid you'll like me, and then you'll get to know me, and that'll be bad. I'm afraid you won't like me, and then I'll be hurt. I'm afraid I'm going to get too much and not know how to handle it. I'm afraid I'm not going to get enough. I'm so afraid. All my defects of character today are driven by my fears. My pride, my ego, all this is driven by my fears. And my fears are an indication of my lack of faith in God. All right? The longer I stay sober, the more stuff I learn about me. You know, this is not a stagnant program. This is a very dynamic way of life. Okay, so I get to the fourth step. I'm feeling pretty good. I do my fifth step. And then he makes me sit for the sixth step, because the sixth step to me was the most difficult, all right? Right? I can't just say I'm willing to have these defects of character leave me, because I don't see them as defects of character. They're tools that allow me to get the stuff I need to get. They're weapons that let me hurt you when you hurt me. They're armor to protect me from you. These are not defects. These are life skills. And I'm loath to give them up. So my sponsor made me sit in step six, write my day out. And when I saw myself behaving a certain way, change that behavior as a demonstration of my willingness to God. So we took the seven deadly sins, we mashed them up with my defects of character, and then we took the seven virtues. Okay? So when I was acting in a prideful way, I would have to catch myself, stop, and act humbly. Okay? So there was a roadmap for me to demonstrate my willingness to God. It was tough, but it worked. Ninth step, I'll move right ahead. Toughest amends I ever made was a financial amends. It was the toughest amends I had to ever had to make. You see, I owed the Bank of America a lot of money. Because when I was cashing those forged payroll checks, I was using my own bank. Told you I wasn't much of a criminal, right? So I had to pay the Bank of America back for all the money I had taken from them. All right? So I'm 3 years in, and I got some money now. And I don't want to pay Bank of America. Bank of America got plenty money. So I became the what do you think guy. We see him around the fellowship. The what do you think guy? What do you think? 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 You know, I got to find somebody that will allow me to do what I want to do. Okay? And I remember my sponsor pulling me aside and saying, hey, dude, the only reason you have the money is because you've been doing the right thing. And now that you've got the money, you don't want to do the right thing. This is what you're going to do. You're going to go in and you're going to pay the money. And oh, by the way, shut the F up. Nobody wants to hear your nonsense. Okay? Yeah, he was kind of rough. Need a little Bactine after talking to my sponsor. So I go into the B of A. I got me a cashier's check. And I say to the lady, my name is D.K. Sappington. I owe you some cash. This is what I did. And here's the cashier's check. And she said, thank you, and she took it. No balloons fell from the ceiling. No bands played. And they did not give me a bank account. But when I walked out of there, man, I felt like a grown-up. For the first time in my life, I felt like an adult. Alcoholics and babies make messes for other people to clean up. For the first time in my life, I was doing what my grandson said, handling my business. And it felt damn good. If you guys, anybody in here, are struggling with your ninth, I'm telling you, you do not want to miss that feeling of having everything off your back. It was a great feeling. I don't know when this happened, but somewhere through this journey, a new guy showed up in my life, and he wasn't like me. He was a guy that would shake your hand and stay around long enough to hear the answer. He was a guy that actually did stuff for other people and didn't expect anything in return. Now, I don't know exactly where he came from, and I can't tell you exactly when he showed up, but one morning I looked in the mirror, and the brother was there. And I knew what you guys meant by staying for the miracle. I had had a personality change. I had become a different person. I didn't really realize it, I think, until my father got sick. So my father and I made my amends to my family. My father and I got really close. We were buds, okay? And he caught the cancer. And they gave him 6 months to live. And being the overachievers we are in my family, I got a call about 3 or 4 months later. I was in Tokyo. And my mom said, if you want to see your father alive, you need to come home right now. So I remember flying back to San Diego, changing bags, and flying down to Alabama where my father was. He wanted to die in his own home, in his own bed. And I remember going in, dropping my luggage, kissing my mother and my sister, going back into the bedroom where my father was. And my dad came out of that morphine haze just long enough for him and I to have that conversation. We talked about the safe deposit box. We talked about the insurance paper. We talked about the cars. And he finally said to me, he said, son, I need you to look in on your mama from time to time. And I said, I got it, Pop. And he smiled and he said, I know you do. That was a Sunday. Tuesday morning, my father was coughing. So I kind of held him up in the bed, you know, so he could get it out. And my daddy left me. And I was able to close his eyes, lay him down, and go comfort my mother and my sister at the foot of the bed. Who is this guy? You know, I'm the guy that runs when things get too tight. I'm the guy that can't handle heavy stuff. But there I was, calling the relatives to come down for the funeral. There I was, working with the minister on the eulogy. There I was, picking out the clothes for my father to wear. There I was, standing up and stepping up. Where did I learn how to do that? I learned it here. I learned it from you. Alcoholics Anonymous allowed me to slowly become the man I have always wanted to be, but never, ever had the courage to be. The miracle for me is that I don't live my life the same way I used to. My mom died. My mom died a couple years ago. And I had to go back through that whole process again, go back down to Alabama, gather all the relatives, do the funeral, the whole thing. And quite honestly, I hate my family. My relatives are like the country of Australia, peopled entirely by criminals. I don't fit. So I asked my sponsor, what can I do? And he said, be of service. Go down there and be of service. And when you come back, we'll grieve together. That's what we do here. God, I love this fellowship. Okay, so to wrap things up, all right? If you are new here, I've got some good news and some bad news. All right? The good news is we have found a solution to your problem with alcohol. The bad news is we're it. Embrace the horror, baby, okay? This is a million-dollar program, but it's being shoved up my ass a nickel at a time. Nothing here has happened to me quickly, but I guarantee, if you stay this path, it will happen to you. If you are afraid, that's all right. Because we will lend you our courage until you find your own. If you don't believe in God, that's fine too. Believe in us. Do what we do, and your God will find you. These are not comfortable chairs in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I must warn you in advance. There are no comfortable seats here. These are ejection seats. As soon as you stop doing the work, your ass will be ejected out of here, and there is no guarantee you will come back. Fight for your seat. Fight for your sobriety. Get out of yourself and do things that are not natural to you. That's what I've done. And through God's help, I've got a little over 21 years in a row of not taking a drink. And I was the guy that used to smoke crack in the trees in Balboa Park. Yes, because everybody knows the police won't climb the trees. They'll just shine the flashlight up there and say, hey, you, come down. And I'll take that last blast, baby, because if I'm going to jail, it ain't gonna be for possession. I don't do that anymore. Look at me. Something has happened to me. The program of Alcoholics Anonymous has happened to me. And if it can happen to me, it certainly can happen to you. Thanks.